The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Bizarre.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan. Bazan.
This is Bazan, the Bazan Weird, a fiction podcast with me, your host, Mr. Frank. How you doing, Zoners? Welcome back to the show. Glad you're checking in with us again this week as we bring you another fine, talented writer in the bizarre and weird fiction realms. But before we can talk about that particular writer, we have to pay the bills, Zoners. Now, there's a wonderful bunch of podcasts on the Project Entertainment Network now, and I've been listening to a lot of them, checking out what they're doing with their little spots for our sponsor, and I got to tell you, I am really enjoying the promotions that they're doing over on Your New Opinion podcast. They're like some of my favorite subculture corsets promo. So I'm going to do like my little riff on the Your New Opinion subculture corset promo. Here we go. Hey, Mr. Frank.
Yes, Mr. Frank.
You look like you're missing something. I can't put my finger on it.
You're quite right, Mr. Frank. I got this whole look put together, this alternative, gothy look, and it's just, I'm feeling short.
You do look a little short for a goth, much like a stormtrooper in a Luke Skywalker costume. Maybe you should get some footwear.
Footwear would be awesome. I could get out of these bare heels. I could walk outside to show off my look if I just had the right shoe to go along with my gothy alternative look.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Frank, I happen to know a great place for you to go and get awesome looking alternative shoes to complete your alternative gothy looking look.
Oh, do tell, Mr. Frank.
With pleasure. Let me tell you about Subculture Corsets shoes. They carry this shoe that's really going to knock your socks off. It's going to lift you up about 75 feet into the air, and you're going to look smashing wearing them. I'm talking about the Demonia 61 boots. They're available in sizes 6 through 12, and they are tight looking. That's going to complete your alternate gothic look. They're sexy. They're big, chunky heels, 75 feet up in the air, and you're going to get a nice lift on your calf, you know, because they're heely, and your calves are going to look tight. And also, too, like, they're a little bit open, you know, it's not all closed, and they got all studs and leather. It's going to totally complete your look.
Oh, Mr. Frank, be still my beating heart. That sounds like the perfect addition to my alternative gothic look. I'm going to head over right now to subculturecorsets.com, and I'm going to add those Demonia 61 boots to my shopping cart and check out. And I'm seeing here on their website, it's a really reasonable price.
Why, yes, it is, Mr. Frank. It's a totally reasonable price. But I want to help you save a little bit more jingle and make it completely, completely reasonable, beyond reasonable.
Oh, do tell, Mr. Frank. How can you help me save even more jingle?
Well, Mr. Frank, all you got to do after you add your Demonia 61 boots to your shopping cart at subculturecourses.com is type in the promotional code BIZONG, and you will receive 10% more off the price of your order. So why not add some nice accessories to really, really flesh out that alternative look you've now completed with your Demonia 61 boots?
Oh, I'll tell you what, Mr. Frank. I appreciate that beyond anything. I'm going to load up my cart. I'm going to buy more to save more, Mr. Frank.
That's a fantastic idea, Mr. Frank. And don't forget, free shipping on all your orders, so you don't even have to worry about that additional cost.
Ah, Mr. Frank, I don't think we can lose shopping at subculturecourses.com.
No, Mr. Frank, we can't. End scene. That's how you do it, Zongers. Learning everything the way that Your New Opinion does it. Check their podcast out, too, after you're done listening to Bazong. So, Zongers, let's continue on after this tomfoolery, these shenanigans. This week, I said, we do have another writer on the show. He's been on before. It's been quite a while since he's been on before. And I've just been waiting for an excuse to get him back on the show. And he gave me that excuse in the form of an advanced reader copy of his new book that will be coming out from Dynatox Books. It's an unofficial release date of March 2nd, which coincides with the release of the new Death Wish movie. And as you'll hear, that his new book is tied in with the sort of Death Wish. It's all connected, Zongers, right? So without too much further ado, let's get ourselves a nice hot dog from Nathan's. Let's go on over to Coney Island, ride some steeplechase, and have a nice day out there, and maybe listen to Bazong with Nick Catto, who's this week's guest. And when we're done, we're going to watch some Warriors. Zongers, we can't talk to Nick Catto without talking about movies. And Mr. Frank is not a movie buff by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I try to hang in there with Nick. I try. But, you know, Nick can just movie buff circles around me. So it's all good. It's all fun. Let's listen to Nick Catto and his Staten Island accent. I can't even do it. Give us the gong. It is my pleasure to welcome back to Bazong this week. The guy is just I can see him from my home. To quote Sarah Palin, I can see his house from my home. a wonderful person, one of you being, and is coming around again. So we're going to have him back on as things are kicking off for him. Welcome back to Bazong, Mr. Nick Catto. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I love this cast. And I could kind of see you through the blinds over here.
Yeah, just across the river, Nick and I are. And as you can tell by his accent, he's Northeast New York guy and
Oklahoma.
From New York, Oklahoma, yeah. It was funny, Nick. I had a couple of weeks back, I had on Mr. Jeff O'Brien, who said he thoroughly enjoyed your New Jersey accent. And I told Jeff if he wanted to continue living, he would correct his shit and never tell Nick that he believed he was from New Jersey.
Oh, that's great. I do have to listen to Jeff's show. I apologize.
That's okay. No, nothing but love for Jeff. And I get it. Sometimes we always talked about, because Jeff has that wonderful Pepperidge Farm New England accent that I love so much. And he said, he said he didn't pick up my New Jersey accent, but he picked up Nick Catto's New Jersey accent. Like, don't tell Nick that. I said, because I'm actually originally from Brooklyn, and I know I had to struggle so badly when I moved to New Jersey with all these people picking on me for the fucking thing. And now I got the dumb New Jersey accent, and it's just the opposite. So it's all good all around. Anyway, Nick, it's been a while since you've been on the show. The last time you were on the show, we were talking about Uptown Death Squad, and you had your your Herschel book had either just come out or was just about to come out, and unfortunately we lost Herschel in the time since. But what have you been up to since then?
Novellas, which one we're going to talk about in a minute, which is due out soon, and I have another one out, I believe, in June, which we'll get into. And I still can't mention, I don't know if we mentioned on the last show, but I do have my first nonfiction film book out, which I'm beyond excited about. And I'm hoping any day now the publisher will let me announce it. And to say I'm thrilled over this is an understatement, because it's one of my favorite film book presses. And I think this one, I think people are really going to dig this one. So those are my three main things that are cooking right now.
It's gorgeous. And I know if there's nothing else that we're going to talk about when I have Nick Catto on, we're going to talk about fucking movies for sure. and I'm intimidated because I have nowhere near the wealth of knowledge and love for cinema. I mean, cinema, right. Film. If anybody knows Nick, it's not I watch movies on my HDTV. Nick goes out weekend after weekend to these theaters houses and watches like the 15 millimeter 75. I don't even know what the millimeters are, but you watch the millimeters. You have to see the millimeters, and that's your thing. You have just this passion for, I mean, true film and the art of it. And though, like, I'm grossly undereducated, and I know that, you know, in and of itself, that's a passion and art form for you, and so much of your fiction is informed by that.
All right. And, yeah, I'm not, I mean, I have a lot of friends that I call film Nazis. They just, they won't even go to the theater if it's not on an actual film, which, I mean, I do love, but, I mean, a few years ago, Fulci's classic Zombie was released on Blu-ray, and in Manhattan at the now-closed Sunshine Theater, they had a screening of it on Blu-ray, and I've never heard that film look or sound better. So, I mean, digital has its place, you know? But there's just something, you know, which I think we did just something about seeing an actual film stock, you know?
I know. You're like one of my go-to. If I see Nick Cato say, like, hey, this is the movie, I got to, like, find out where that movie is. And so much. I mean, since Christmas, I have gotten myself a Shudder account. And right. I've discovered so many wonderful films, not only new stuff, but, like, the old stuff. And just this past weekend, we were talking about Raw Force. That was,
yeah.
I mean, you didn't recommend it. It came from John Bowden, but right. you were like right there, like, fuck yeah, goddamn Raw for us. And so, like, between the two of you, have been giving excellent recommendations lately.
Shudder surprised me, man. I took out a subscription just to see some movie called Kuso, K-U-S-O.
Oh, really. Yeah. Oh, my God. What did
I think they lured a lot of people in with that, and then I started checking out all their stuff, and they, you know, as far as rare horror, they blow Netflix out of the water, so.
Uh-huh. What did you think of Kuso?
It was okay. It was, I mean, I love weird as much as anybody, but I mean, I enjoyed it. I don't think your typical movie fan is going to get into it, but
it's. I'll tell you what happened. Here's my viewing experience with Kuso. Again, John Bowden. You know, I said I signed up for Shudder. What should I watch? John Bowden was like, "There, watch Kuso," and I was probably half inebriated starting to watch this movie. So I would say I was a good. At least a third of the way into the movie, if not halfway, before I realized that this is a vignette piece. I thought there was like one continuous thing going on, and this was so like I just took in the Greasy Strangler like maybe last fall, and I thought like right. That was like the craziest fucking thing I could ever possibly watch until I saw Kuso like fucking 4 months later. I'm like, wow, that made your Greasy Strangler seem very coherent and normal in comparison.
Right.
But it
mentioned John, I just want to quickly, for anyone on Facebook, if you're not friends with John, definitely friend him, just even if just for his film reviews. And my friend Matt Schwartz, who a lot of people in the publishing community know, Matt's in the theater about four nights a week, and he reviews everything, you know. He's a single guy, lives in Manhattan, mm-hmm. and I love his reviews because he's who he keeps me updated of most of the stuff that I just can't, you know, I don't physically have the time to go see all these movies. So,
you know, well, following you on Facebook though, and this is like, I'm kind of blown away. Like you are like at least showing, yes, I'd like to go to this thing at this theater and this thing at the, where you are, of course, close proximity where Manhattan, where I'm sure a lot of this is going on is there's so many theaters like showing retro movies, 16 millimeter stuff. Like, the ease of it for you, it's almost like is there like a whole click type of thing involved with going to these things? Is it the same groups of people just following around these things?
I know several people who do go, not together, but, you know, I mean, we have a theater, the Film Forum, that's always showing, I mean, not just horror and, you know, the weird stuff, but they're just showing like old school movies on film prints. And, you know, we have a couple of museums. We have Museum of the Moving Image and Museum of Modern Art, which gets a huge shout out tonight because their copy of the original print, The Night of the Living Dead, is what was used for the beautiful transfer that just came out on Blu-ray from Criterion.
Mm.
So if anybody ever wanted to see that print, you still have to go to the museum.
But you can
but
see
now
that.
You can see it crystal clear thanks to them. So that was a great thing they did.
And now, how original is a print that they have? Is it like one of the original like copies that were made?
From what I understand, it's an archival print, which I'm sure a couple of my film friends are cringing now saying, no, that's not what it is. But from what I understand, it's like one of Romero's original prints, and, you know, they're housing it. So they've had it for years. They've had it, like, mm-hmm. I think since the mid 80s.
I remember I was probably in my early teens when I went to that museum, and I just didn't understand what to do there. You know, like, I think my aunt and uncle had brought me there, and we walked in, you know, this is going to be wonderful. And really not understanding what to expect. And it was like, oh, yeah, you can go into a viewing room and you just pick out and leak. We didn't even get it. I think I remember sitting there watching like old Popeye cartoons in sort of a, you know, a small little theater. But other than that, I just didn't even understand what it was for. Of course, years later, and I appreciate what it's really all about. And it's an absolute treasure there. Do you get there a lot because of your passion for film?
I don't get there much, but even more so than that, I heavily recommend a trip to Queens to a place called the Museum of the Moving Image, where I just visited that for the first time a few years. I actually saw Herschel Gordon Lewis's Wizard of Gore there.
Nice.
And it's just amazing. I mean, you go upstairs, they have like the original bust of Linda Blair from The Exorcist. They have like Diane Keaton's outfit from Annie Hall, and they actually have projectors from like, you know, the 19-teens and 20s. It's just an amazing place.
That sounds really sexy as far as the film
stuff. Oh, it is.
Almost like Smithsonian level type of collection.
Oh, totally.
So, expanding upon your love of film that we've been talking about, you also gave me an advanced copy to read of your upcoming novella called Death Witch.
Right.
Witch. not to be confused with, or perhaps to be confused with, Death Wish. Now, we discussed before we started recording, you don't have a pinpoint of the actual release date of Death Witch, but we're going to talk about it tonight some. In anticipation of its very soon upcoming release. Kind of talk to me. There's got to be some parallels between Death Wish and Death Witch.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Jordan, the publisher over at Dynatox Ministries, he likes to do series. And I was a part of a Third World Cannibal series. I was part of a, what did they do? They had a Nazi exploitation series. Mm-hmm. A couple of these, he tried to start a blaxploitation one. I think I was the only guy who had one. Now he's trying to do a rape revenge series, and these are all grindhouse, you know, 70s cinema style. And so I said, okay, what can I do? You know, I don't want to do a total I spit on your grave or a Ms. 45. So I'm like, the name Death Witch, just, you know, naturally, I just, I'm sitting there. The hardest thing to me as a writer is getting a good title. And that title just instantly came to me, and I was like, boom, that's it. We're going to somehow do this a supernatural revenge tale. So at least in my tiny brain, I think that makes it a little different than, you know, your typical rape revenge story. And I just came up with this idea that this girl, you know, moved up into the middle of nowhere upstate New York, and she's just starting to learn witchcraft. And, you know, a bunch of guys see her in a bar, and they rape her, and, you know, instead of just picking up a gun and going after them, she's like, wait a minute, maybe this stuff I've been studying can help me to straighten these bastards out, and kind of does.
And so and so it goes. Now, is there were you trying to bridge a gap with the Death Wish movies to this, or was it just sort of that just ultra violence that you're playing on words that you were playing with?
No, it was really just a play on words. I mean, the title came first because I didn't know. I'm like a rape revenge. I thought about it for a while, and one day I remember I was driving, and that title just hit me, and I got so excited. I'm like, wait a minute, Death Witch. That's gold. That's like almost like the name of a trauma film, you know? And then I pitched the idea to Jordan, and he was like, write it. He goes, why isn't it written yet? and he dug it too. So.
For me as a reader, you know, I was seeing the play on words that was happening, and
right.
I don't know if it was forcing me to draw those, you know, make those gaps, make those bridges to the two, but mm-hmm. I was definitely seeing, as far as the female protagonist goes, I was definitely like trying to look at her as a sort of female Bronson.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I wrote it, I really had, you know, Zoe from Miss 45 in my head, and I don't know. I mean, of course, I mean, naturally, you know, I would think she was kind of like a female Bronson, but I didn't want it to be like this. If you ever saw the remake of I Spit on Your Grave, I don't know if you've seen that.
No, the
first half of it was, I went to see that in the theater, and the first half was good, but when she starts killing the guys, it's like in the original, you know, Camille Keaton's character was this quiet, innocent girl, and it's like even when she was killing the guy, she was kind of laid back because she was just shy. It's like in the remake, the actress, she just became like the Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And she's killing these guys in all these elaborate ways with these, you know, with like these Wile E. Coyote type contraptions. And I'm sitting there like, are they serious with this movie? And I didn't, even though my story is, you know, considered exploitation and grindhouse, really, I wanted to have her kind of believable. She is a strong, I like having strong female characters, especially when nasty shit happens to them at first. But I just wanted her to be, you know, despite this supernatural element, I wanted her to be somehow believable. You could believe that it's more the occult stuff that's killing these guys than it's her.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like the power that she's learning how to control.
Right. And I mean, I don't want to be spoiler, but that sort of sneaks up on you in this story.
Because, that's good. Well, that's what I was going for. So yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah. No, you pulled that off. It's not totally apparent the way things play out, how it's going to go in the end, which was a really cool ending. Because, I mean, you say it's sort of, you know, a paranormal type of thing. And of course, we're talking about witches, but it sort of plays out on an ambiguity of that supernatural nature for mm-hmm. most of the story anyway, until the punchline, shall we say, where you sort of bring it in from left field, the, mm-hmm. the supernatural nature. So I really enjoy that too.
Cool. That's good to hear.
Now also, you know, another thing that came to mind just reading this, because, you know, I was trying to figure out how you know, obviously you don't just publish with Dynatox, Jordan Crawl,
right.
You're with Grindhouse and some other presses. Obviously, you've pretty much said it was a sort of Jordan was looking for a thing, so you wrote it for him. But is that how, maybe not just here, but how you dictate where you submit to? Because this story could have fit into a, you know, like a Grindhouse Press book as well. It, just the nature of the story. Yeah. Are you writing for presses per se, or are you just obviously?
Well, I don't think I'm writing for presses. Like, Grindhouse Press put out two of my books, which, you know, would equal three novellas because one of them was a collection. But I mean, Grindhouse recently had an open submission, and a couple of projects I'm working on now, I didn't think would fit them. So, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't even bother submitting, and I love them though. I mean, if you're a fan of them, and you know, definitely try hooking up with them. They're just, you know, Claudia and they're just great people to work with.
Yeah,
but I didn't have anything that I think would fit, you know, what's in their guidelines now. It's a little different than when they first started publishing me, but very slightly different. But like in the case with Jordan, I knew they were looking, you know, he was looking to start, you know, a series. And one of the other series I forgot was Nunsploitation. That was another one I was a part of.
Nunsploitation, so. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're definitely very suited to the types of all types of things that they're looking for at Dynatox. And
I'm just lucky that all these small, I mean, I've been a fan of small press for 20 something years now, but I'm just lucky that there's these presses that are publishing this stuff that I, you know.
Yeah, that you even have a place to put them.
Yeah, years ago, people would look at this and go, all right, this is too weird. It's not really horror, but it's not, you know.
Well, at least
we call it Grindhouse, but it's, you know, what do you really call this stuff? It's just a little bit of everything, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's sort of, you know, I'm reading this, and it's a witch, you know, it is a witch story at its heart.
Right.
How did the modernism of the witch in your story, are you, is it all just from reading and seeing movies about witches, or do you have some sort of intrigue with witchcraft?
Well, when I was younger, I was really, I'm sure this will shock everyone, but like I'm sure most guests of Bazong, I was just a strange kid. I mean, I played a little sports at this, but my passion was going to the library when I was a kid. If I wasn't watching monster movies on TV, I was in the library reading about Bigfoot and UFOs and, you know, possession and stuff like that. So I was always interested in witchcraft and, you know, Satanism and all of that stuff. So, I mean, I've been reading about it since I was a kid. Never practiced it. You know, I know people who are involved with it. But so I tried to keep it. Now, of course, it's movie wise, but I know a lot of people who are dabblers.
Uh-huh.
And that's how my character is. She is a dabbler. And I guess this is what pushed her to the point like, wow, maybe I should really try to utilize this stuff, you know?
Well, here's the connection I made, because I don't remember if it was in The Dirt or if it was in The Heroin Diaries, but reading this book, it kept making me think about Nikki Sixx, right? And it's in one of his books, he's basically saying like how he used to hang out in this apartment in Van Nuys, and I think he was dating Lita Ford at the time, and he was getting reading all this witchcraft stuff and Satanism shit, and he was like freaking himself out. And Lita Ford with the crazy shit that was just going on, to the point where, like, even though he's Nikki Sixx all fucked up on drugs and shit in the 80s, he still had to fucking stop because it was really getting ridiculous, the crazy shit going on. And I'm reading Death Witch, and I'm almost picturing a young Nick Catto almost in the same thing. And he's kind of bringing us into that world of his own in a way, in that witchcraftery, like, oh, this is weird shit going on.
Well, I mean, one thing that I found out, we used to have a store in Manhattan years ago called Magical Child, and we used to go there when we were teenagers, because that's where you would get, like, I mean, the place was packed with all kinds of crazy books, but that's where you would get the t-shirts that Kerry King used to wear with the pentagrams, you know.
Right.
The quote-unquote real ones, not the, you know, the ones you get in Hot Topic. but the woman in there would talk to us, an old woman, and she told us, you know, she goes, most of what you metal guys and punks, you know, come in here looking for about Satanism, she goes, that's horror movies. That's not what it's really like. Mm-hmm. Most of the girls that come in here with this witchcraft, you know, she goes, that's not what it is. So, like, you know, this lady kind of like,
she broke it down.
And she did tell me, she says, the people that are really into this, you know, the Satanism that Hollywood portrays, she says, those guys are pretty much like, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but I was told from her and a couple of people that the real Satanist, quote unquote, she says it's almost like an underground network like the mafia, and you don't want to get anywhere near.
Mm-hmm.
And even they're not chopping babies up and everything else that the, you know, guys like Bob Lawson want you to believe. But to me, it was, you know, all the witchcraft and the occult is just something I was interested in, but, you know.
Yeah, once you kind of were able to pull back the covers a little bit.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I've read the extreme end of it, and, you know, a lot of witchcraft now is, I guess, is Wicca, and, you know.
Did that store happen to be in the Village?
19th Street, yeah, it was right outside of the Village.
Of course it was. It just sounded to me like the place, you know, you always head to the Village, and you all the weird shit you needed, you just go to the Village for.
Yeah, there was a couple of rites of passage. There was going, you know, of course, the Times Square, mm-hmm. and then there was going to this crazy occult shop.
Yeah. In my youth, I missed the craziness of Times Square, really. I never got there, but, you know, I'd take that R train to Prince Street, man, and see what the hell's going on. It was always, there was never not an adventure getting off in the Village and exploring.
Yeah. So, and one of my biggest things is, as much as I'm a horror guy, I was always into comedy. So no matter how much I read about this shit, I would start laughing at it. So I don't think any coven would ever take me anyway.
That asshole keeps making fun of us.
Yeah, you know.
I feel that way as a guy who writes like horror comedy. I always feel like the very serious people are always just pissed off at me. Like, they're like, this fucking guy is making fun of everything we fucking do. And you know, like, get shunned away. I always see that sort of look from the more serious horror people about what I'm doing. I'm like, okay.
I mean, I'm friends with a lot of writers. I won't mention names because one of them's a huge writer and I love him. But like, he even told me, Nick, I hate funny horror. And I'm like, well, that's my favorite stuff. But yeah. I mean, I'm like, listen, there's people that shouldn't be doing it, and there's people that can do it. You know. Frank, I think you, after your last book, I think you do it fine.
Thank you.
I'm just saying, there's some people that can do it without disrespecting the genre. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, I know. You always see.
There was a movie in the 80s called, and don't worry if you've never seen it, because I don't even want to mention the name of it, but it was called Gourmet Zombie Chef from Hell. And you can tell it's so bad. And you can tell the people that made it were assholes. And if you're listening, yous are all assholes, and they did nothing but insult the horror genre. And to me, that, you know, that shouldn't exist.
For me, it's always a telltale. I try not to ever go like, oh, my shit is knee slapping hilarious and like label it funny. I don't know if my stuff is funny or not, but you know, that's up to the reader. But when I see people like just labeling it like this is hilarious, blah blah, I'm like, I know this is not going to go well, and you have no idea how to pull up the humor of things. It's sort of telltale.
This is one of the reasons why I love, because I've been cheering him on for years, why a writer like Jeff Strand got so popular and respected. Because, I mean, one of his books was called The Sinister Mr. Corpse, which, to me, it's a serious zombie novel, but it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the few people that really, you know, I think people, and even the serious people, respect him. And it's a tough...
That's how
horror and comedy are not easy to pull off together, but
no,
he does it.
I think it's all about how you present it. Like, for me, like, the thing that comes to mind for me is Clive Barker's, Jesus Christ, it just escaped my thing. The book you're reading the book is possessed, and it's, oh my God. But it's brilliant.
I haven't read that, but I know which one you're talking
about. It's going to come to me in about 10 minutes when we're talking about something else entirely. It's not presented as comedy or anything, and but you read it and it's hilarious the way it's deadpan too. It's not like meant to be funny necessarily in your face funny, but the deadpan of it is just wonderful. And that's the way I try to, like, I try to with, like you said, my last book, Brats in Hell. It's Bratwurst in Hell. Like, I don't know what the control of hell over Bratwurst. But I really try to, like, say a deadpan. Like, this is it. You know, I'm not trying to say this is the funniest fucking thing. I don't know if it's funny or not. That's up to you. And but that's the type of thing I'm trying to put across. I don't know that it's funny. I'm sort of mortified to say it's funny. So I enjoy that. Like you said, Jeff Strand is a perfect example. He's always labeled horror comedy, but he never puts himself out there that way, really.
And it's not all he does, he's doing a lot of YA now. And I think his thriller called Pressure was his best book, but all his horror comedies, man, I love them.
Hey, he's wonderful. And it sneaks up. I'm not even big a fan of him, but I always get compared to Christopher Moore, and I'm like, oh, that's, well, that's fine. You can go, that's wonderful. But I
gotta tell you, I'm gonna confess right now, I've only read one of his books.
Yeah,
I think it's called A Dirty Job or something. It has a little baby reaper in a carriage on the cover.
Oh yeah, I haven't read that one, but yeah,
has the single funniest scene that I've ever read in a novel.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I was actually waiting for one of my, at the time my son was younger, he was at a tutor, and I'm sitting in the lobby reading this, and I lost it. And I don't know if all his books have ever seen that funny, but man, oh, it was, these two demons were running around in a sewer, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I have hilarious. To, I don't know, I must have been reading the wrong Christopher Moore books, because I haven't been really impressed by it so far.
I think this was his most horror-oriented one, but... Well, I love his title, so I don't know about what was it, something, Sequin Love Nun or something, I don't know.
I know you've got Sacre Blue and Practical Demon Keeping. Yeah.
Yes.
I think if I've read two of his books, it's a lot. I know for sure the one I've read, and but when I started putting my stuff out there, people kept saying, oh, yeah, you're like Christopher. I'm like, oh, okay. But off of that, I'm like, well, that's something I could tag on to, even though I'm not completely familiar with him. And if you kind of look at my book covers of late, I'm trying to like do a Christopher Moore-esque looking book cover also. Like, that's on purpose. Totally on purpose. Now, for you, since you're coming from the movie thing, I'm sort of shocked that there is, why isn't there no Nick Catto movie? Do you do screenplays? Or have you ever like wanted to desire or pursued making your own movie?
Oh yeah. Back in the 80s when I was, I did a fanzine called Stink. In the middle of it, I was one of these guys when the video recorders came out, I bought one with the sole intention I'm going to make a quote unquote a movie. And we started making a 4-part anthology called Sleaze Show. It was going to be a really trauma, like nasty version of Creep Show. Mm-hmm. And we actually shot the first film. It was called Gorilla. And bands actually submitted music for it. And in the middle of this is when I started learning the art of filmmaking. And I was just like, you know what? I want to do this, but to do it right, and I'm sure, plenty of filmmakers, you have to completely dedicate yourself to it. And at the time, I was just starting to get into writing. I was still in a couple of bands. I just didn't have the time for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'd rather do something, I'd rather just, if I could completely dedicate myself, but, I know a few people today who are doing all right as filmmakers, but you really just have to, that has to be it. It's like, you have to live and breathe that, as far as I'm concerned, even more than when you write. It's like, it's just, and you have to rely, even when you're doing these cheap little backyard films, like I was trying to make, you have to rely on so many people.
Right.
And to me, that was the biggest drawback. I'm like, I could never do this. My passion for filmmaking was just not that, it just wasn't that high.
So even as a writer, have you like explored even screenwriting? Like, okay, maybe I'm not going to do the whole thing, but I'll make a screenplay.
No, I haven't. And, it's a whole nother animal. I mean, at a convention once I was talking to Brian Keene about that, and he said, and he said it in interviews, he's like, listen, I'm not a screenwriter. That's a whole nother. And it's true. It's a whole nother art form.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some guys can do both. And, God bless it, man. It's just a lot of work. And, to me, I just love writing. I love my fiction. I love writing my film column. And, that's where I'm just trying to, as I just passed 50 years of age, I'm just, how much time do we have left? Let's stick with this one thing and see how good we can get it,
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, if nothing else, we didn't cover it the last time, but I am in love with your horror fiction review that you do with John Meyer and
Thank you.
Moore. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. I mean, it helped that you did a couple of my books, but I mean, that's sort of how I like really started paying attention to what you're doing there. And my God, the three of you are doing wonderful reviews. I think it's like, if you ask me, you are the blog, shall we say, blog review for horror books. There's never a bad book that you recommend. Everything's on point.
I mean, our biggest criticism, I mean, just quickly, I love fanzines. I published them all through the 80s. I did a horror one. I did a couple of punk zines. And then I did Horror Fiction Review was an old-fashioned, Xerox fanzine from 03 till I think it was 08 when I went digital, just because even just Xeroxing stuff and postage just got ridiculously expensive. And it's just, self-publishing a little zine is just a passion of mine. I love doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm very thankful for John again, especially Christine, because Christine is a reviewing machine. Mm-hmm. And she's, I've never seen anyone read as much as her. But people are always, the one criticism that the horror fiction group gets is that we love everything.
You
would not believe how many books that we do not put in. Because to me, if I feel a book really, really deserves to have a negative review out there, I'll do it. If not, this is a fanzine. I want to put out what's good. Right. I don't understand why having a negative review of something, to me, that's a waste of time on everybody's end,
I get it. That's exactly why I like it, because I can pretty much count on, like you said, it's not like, 50-50 on the good and bad reviews. You're showing like these are the great fucking things. And it is rare that there's a bad review or even mediocre for that matter, but
when people rag this, I'll point them to, and not that I'm talking bad, because I love Cemetery Dance Publications, mm-hmm. They're always sending me review books of Bentley Little, who's my favorite guy, but their book review section in every issue, I don't ever remember reading a negative review in there. And Cemetery Dance is considered like the number one small press, right, and one of the best fiction magazines in the world. They never publish negative reviews.
Uh-huh. No, but it's like you said, it's the format of what you're doing. Like, there's no time for the negative. Like, we could put that aside. Because what are you doing? Like, say 3 to 5 books on average, you know, that you're putting out. So there's no time for the negative. Let's just, these are the things you should be reading. That's what I love about it. These are the things you should be reading. It's not like, let's shit on these books. This got submitted to me. It's a piece of shit. No, you skip that. It's always, these are the books you should be reading. And I've picked up so many great recommendations, and my to be read pile has been so added upon because of Horror Fiction Review. That's what I like about it. I'm not looking for shit reviews. I'm looking for, like, where should we be reading? And you guys have your finger on the pulse to me of what's coming out in horror, like, before it's coming out. I really totally respect what you're doing over there.
Thanks. And the thing that sucks is it started out small. And, I mean, now it says on the site we don't take submissions. We really don't. But people are always emailing us on the site. And my to-be review pile is beyond stupid, especially since ebooks got popular.
Oh,
and
I'll
it's
bet.
Just, I'm never going to get to half it. I just reviewed a book today by Keith Minion, and Keith Minion's been around writing since the 70s, a phenomenal writer and artist. Mm-hmm. And I just got done, and it was great. And I've had it, you know, for over half a year. It's just that's how backed up I am, you know?
Right, right. Well, I mean, doing this podcast, I know, because I'm constantly, you know, right. Everybody's very generous and wants to send me things, and I truly do appreciate it. But I'm a chronically slow reader, and you know, I said we can do this. I want to learn about you. I don't need to read your book. I want to learn about you. You put yourself out there, but you know, at the same token, I don't want people to give me things and, like, you know, hold it against me that I haven't read and stuff. So, like, I'll take those things and I can interview you and everybody else far faster than I can read all that stuff. And still, still, I have a pile of books backlogged from everybody who just are going to send me their stuff anyway. And I truly, truly appreciate it, because I don't have to spend another penny on books for the rest of my life, really.
Well, you know, that's just review copy.
Yes.
I'll still take time to read, you know, what I want to read.
Exactly.
I read a lot of film-related nonfiction books. I read, you know, I have a lot of regular authors but I have a lot of other authors who I follow, you know. And, you know. Yeah, and the thing is, I tell people all the time, Horror Fiction Review is a free newsletter. I don't owe anyone anything. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't believe so many emails we get.
Really?
Well, fuck yourself. I sent you a review copy. You never read it. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you know.
I can honestly, excuse me.
Sorry. Watch how fast I read your book now, you know.
I can honestly say, you sent me a copy of, I don't know, I think it was Uptown Death Squad. I'm like, hey, I'll give you this. You know, I felt guilty. Like, oh, you give me something. Let me give you something back. This is my book. And then you put it up on there. And I was like, I was completely tickled. And thank God you gave it a wonderful review. But I was completely tickled that you even included in that, because it was not my intention. Like, here, read this and put it up. Not my intention at all, but I mean, you're generous.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I read something, you know, regardless, you know,
That's the way it should be.
Even if we didn't, you know, meet once, the book was a riot. So, you know, people should know. That's how I am. People,
Yeah. See, Nick understands me. Nick understands me. He's like,
there you go.
Yeah. You're not like, I'm not beholden to read your book because you handed it to me. And I do. I mean, I don't have to pay dime one. And that's almost unfair that I don't have to pay dime one to anybody ever again with all the free books I get. But I can't read them all. I just can't read them all. And I'm really bad. I don't know how you are as your reading pace is, but I am terribly slow at reading.
Yeah, I'm a pretty quick reader, and, you know, people always tell me, how do you read so much, you know? And the bottom, I tell everyone, you'll be shocked at what you can do when you shut the TV off.
Oh, that's...
Even if, I mean, granted, you get home from work and that you're tired, you want to watch TV, but even if you just spend maybe 40 minutes, you read a couple of chapters, if you do that a week, you got a book done.
If I was as dedicated, you know, to my reading on a nightly basis as I was to my writing, I'd have a lot more books out right now.
Well, but I put them both together. I do a little writing when I get in. I try to every night. It's not always possible. Uh-huh. And then, you know, whatever I usually read the nonfiction stuff at night when my brain's not as.
Yeah.
And then during lunchtime at work, you know, I get an hour lunch. I'll spend about 40 minutes of that reading.
Mm-hmm. And when do you sneak in your writing?
As soon as I get in from work.
Yeah, you have to.
I come home, I walk to two Killer Dotsons, and then if I don't do it then, I'm not doing it because...
Oh, I hear you. I hear you. That's...
After 8 hours a day, it's just you don't want to... It's hard to be creative when you come home wanting to kill people, you know?
I've struggled. I've tried to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning thing, and I made that work for a little while, and then I got burned out.
Yeah, I tried that, too.
And then I've tried to, like, right after work, but, you know, I have young kids and a wife that are more demanding of my time than my writing, yes. And it that always gets fouled up there, and it's, you know, I was beating myself up about it for a while, but now I'm like... Look, I'm just going to take my shots when I can. And thankfully, I've hooked up with a couple of writers, and every now and again, we get together on a weekend. We'll head to a Panera, and I'll spit out like a couple thousand words. And man, that feels satisfying. But
yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just the thing is not beating myself up about the daily thing, I think, because there was a point where I, you know, just the way life goes and jobs and all that, you know, I was able to do a daily thing and, it's become harder and harder, and it's sort of like, as long as I think maybe I look at the weekly picture nowadays.
Yeah. And I remember reading an interview. Granted, she doesn't have to worry like we do, but like Anne Rice, she told me she did. And she told me I've written an interview with her, I think in Writer's Digest years ago, where I think it must be the last 15, 20 years. And she's had plenty of books out in that time. She just writes on Saturday. Now, granted, yeah, you know, she's successful, but it wasn't always like that. But
well, the thing I learned doing, even just doing this podcast, is that, you know, the writing every day thing, while it's wonderful, everybody is different. You know, yeah, Stephen Graham Jones, what does he do? He locks himself in a fucking hotel for 2 weeks, and out come 15 books after 2 weeks. Or Carlton Mellick, the same sort of thing. He just kind of spends writing weekends in a hotel, and he's got his
one of my favorite stories. Gary Braunbeck is one of my all-time favorite writers, and he had a book out about 12 years ago, a novella called At the Midnight Museum. It's one of my favorite books of all time. And he said on a blog he wrote that the idea hit him, and he wrote it one weekend in 30 hours. So, and he doesn't usually write like that, but certain stories hit you.
Yeah,
I've actually spent more time. Matter of fact, I just finished my first short story of the year that I'm waiting to do a second draft on. I spent more time on that than I spent on, I think, the entirety of like Death Wish.
Yeah, I could believe it. That's been my experience. Some things come easier than others. I've started and stopped at least two novel sort of ideas, you know, getting 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 words into them before I realize I don't know where to take this. And I've lost a criminal amount of time, you know, in being able to release something doing that. But I'm working on something now where it's sticking, you know, I'm 20 something thousand words, 25,000 words into it. It's just about done. So
right.
I get it. And then in between all that, like you said, there's short stories and other things that kind of call to you, and you just try to do the best you can with the time you have.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, we're getting close to the end, but I do want to give you an opportunity. Of course, we're looking at Death Wish, which with the pointy black hat will be coming out from, it's Dynatox, right?
Yes. And at one time, I don't know if this is still true, Dynatox was going to coincide with the release of the remake of Death Wish, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. I don't know if it still is. Hopefully it will be out. I'm hoping it will be out at least sometime in March or early April.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes out for Death Wish. I've read it. Nick graciously gave me an advanced copy, which I've been reading away, and it's really a wonderful, like I said, not spoilery, but it sneaks up on you. The ending sort of sneaks up on you. It was a really satisfying ending to it all. And you also mentioned a nonfiction film book you got coming out soon too.
Yeah, I've been doing a column since 2010 over at a pretty popular site now called Cinema Knife Fight. And my column, Suburban Grindhouse Memories, I've been dying to do a collection of it. And I pitched it to a press who I can't mention, who I already signed a contract with. And the editor there actually knew my column, which blew my mind. And he's like, "Shit, yeah, we'll do this." So it's going to be my column's called Suburban Grindhouse Memories. The book's just going to be called Nick Cato's Suburban Grindhouse. And it's a collection of 75 or 80 of my columns with a whole bunch of new stuff, including interviews with I got an interview with Frank Henenlotter, who directed Basket Case, a whole bunch of people in there. One of the only interviews with actress Lydia Cornell, you might remember from Too Close for Comfort.
Oh, yeah.
She starred in this crazy, shitty movie with James Earl Jones called Blood Tide in like 82.
Oh, my God.
And I contacted her, and she arranged an interview with me, and that blew my mind. So there's a lot of cool stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's going to be out by the end of the year. But yeah, it's going to be called Suburban Grindhouse, and I can't wait to announce who's putting this out.
Oh, I definitely look forward to that. We'll keep our eye out for that. And of course,
for those who never read my column is film reviews, but more memoir style. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, you know, my times at the theater. Everything's about screenings I went to. So a lot of it's pretty funny, though, I think.
Yeah, I enjoy that type of stuff from you. Like, it's just living your passion for going to see movies. That's pretty entertaining for me.
Yeah. And in June, I'm not sure of the final title yet, but there's a press called Books and Booze Press. Mm-hmm. They're from Connecticut. They put a couple of really cool titles out, but they have a series out. I think this is going to be the third book that's a collection of three novellas from three different writers. I think the last one was called Triplicity, but that's coming out in June, and it features my brand new novella called Chew Toys. And I'll just give you a quick idea of the plot. Chew Toys is an alternative story of what happened 2 weeks after Son of Sam was caught.
Mm.
And this is about Harvey, the dog that allegedly spoke to Berkowitz.
Yes.
Well, in my novella, he realizes that his first soldier, David, is busted. So he hops the fence and he starts building an army of his own serial killers.
Oh, my God.
And the editor, Stacy Longo, loved the idea, and we just got done with the final edit, and it's a horror. I think it's more serious, but the whole tone of it's really, really out there. So
I love that. I love so much of what you're like the last porno theater and stuff. Like, I mean, we sort of had the same sort of life experience. So like you're sort of plucking from my history too, which is probably a great deal of why I'm so intrigued by everything you do. But I mean, that sounds amazing.
Huge shout out to Jeff Strand, because when I started, I was going to make a novel out of this some years ago. And I was addicted to this idea of Harvey the Labrador is going to build like an army of serial killers. And I'm like, what should I call this? And Jeff Strand's like, why don't you call it Chew Toys? And I'm like, oh my God, that's perfect.
That's just gorgeous. Perfect. It's gorgeous.
So Jeff, you're the man. Thank you.
Only
it becomes
he could
a
come
movie, up. Get in half, you know.
That's beautiful. I would definitely look forward to that. And of course, check out that horror fiction review. I mean, you're always pointing out, like we said, just the best, you know. We don't focus on the negative. We focus on the positive to check out.
Yeah.
And Nick, thank you very much for joining us here on Bazong once again. I look forward to everything you do as always, and we'll keep in mind all those things. I know we're a little early on getting to you and a lot of stuff you couldn't officially announce, but everybody just keep an eye on Nick Cato's stuff, and by the summer it's going to all blow up, and it's going to be wonderful cinematic exploitation awesomeness that we can always expect from Nick Cato. Nick, thanks again for joining us on Bazong.
Oh, thank you, man. I love this podcast. I love the name of this podcast.
I try my best.
So happy to be on it again, man.
Nick Cato-zongers, be sure to keep an eye out for his new book, Death Witch, coming out right around March 2nd there from Dynatox Ministries. And, of course, check out all of Nick's other work, because he's just an all-around fantastic grindhousey type of writer. I've really enjoyed his stuff over the years. And Nick's just one of the good guys. You know what I'm saying? Just one of the good guys. There's never going to be a problem chilling out with Nick. Zongers, I think I've been a little derelict in my duty of reminding you about the great many things that are always going on here on the Project Entertainment Network. So let me take this opportunity to remind you that Bazong can be heard on iTunes, Stitcher. You can hear us on Spotify now. Check us out. subscribe to us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and also Zongers, YouTube. All the Project Entertainment Network podcasts stream through YouTube now, so you can subscribe to the Project Entertainment Network channel on YouTube, and you can get all the shows over there as well. There's a bazillion ways to listen to Bazong and the podcast on the Project Entertainment Network. So excuses, your excuses are running out, Zongers. I don't know what we have left. Maybe we can stream through Snapchat or something next. I don't know what's left. But really, there's a bazillion ways to do it. So there's no reason that you can't keep up with the Project Entertainment Network podcast, Zongers. And additionally, we also have a Patreon page. Where for as little as a dollar a month, you can get a lot of value-added content, including from Bazong. I've done a bunch of Bizarro book spotlights. I've been derelict also in keeping up on them. It's just been busy for Mr. Frank. But there's also an alternative not Bazong podcast. I've done one over there, and I'd like to explore doing some more of those. So that's just what I'm contributing to the Patreon page over there. But all the Project Entertainment Network hosts are contributing something for a little more, a higher level of contribution. You can get yourself show notes and swag and all kinds of cool stuff like that. So please take a moment to go over to Patreon.com and check out Project Entertainment Network's value-added content on Patreon. And with those things in mind, Zongers, I thank you, as always, for listening to Bazong, and I hope you'll decide to join us again next week and in the weeks to come, Zongers. But until then, you are free to go and listen to these other great Project Entertainment Network of podcasts.
There shall come a podcast like no other. Defenders Dialogue. Marvel Comics' original superhero non-team convenes once again. Comic book writers and authors Brian Keene and Christopher Golden take us back to the 70s and 80s as they discuss Marvel's most dynamic collection of superheroes, Defenders Dialogue with Brian Keene and Christopher Golden, Tuesdays exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
What up, co-workers? It's Hard at Work, show where we talk about nerds, so we talk about at work, to distract us from work, recorded at work. I'm Hard at Work, Matt.
I'm Hard at Work, Nick.
Our show comes on every Tuesday around 6 o'clock or so.
That sounds about right.
And what do we talk about?
We talk about the nerdy stuff, you know, we're talking video games, movies, TV shows.
How much insider knowledge we get?
Zero.
None at all.
We don't know shit.
How good are our opinions?
Oh, they're real good.
They real good, though, trust me. So tune in, give it a listen. You'll love it.
Do you love comic books and consider yourself a diehard fan? Then you need to listen to Parlapod. We have news, reviews, and interviews with your favorite pros, all while bringing some serious laughs. New episodes drop every Wednesday in time for New Comic Book Day. Parlapod is available on the Project Entertainment Network, all major podcast outlets, and Parlapod.com. Tune in and fuel your fandom with Parlapod.
Project Entertainment Network presents My Favorite Story, an anthology featuring short fiction written by the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network podcasts, with
Mary Sangiovanni and Brian Keene from The Horror Show,
Chuck Porter, Aaron Sweet, El Mahari, and Armand Rosamilia of The Mando Method,
Jamie Engel of Origins,
Bizong's Mr. Frank,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Ikon,
It Cooks, Amber Fallon,
Three Guys with Beards, Christopher Gold, Jim Moore, and Jonathan Mabry,
The Buttercup of Doom, Kelly Owen,
Matters of Faith's J. Wilburn,
John Urbansic of Inked Stains.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology from Project Entertainment Network, available on Kindle, Nook, and soon in paperback from the Project Entertainment Network store.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.